You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so that means it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, it's 4:05 Johannesburg time, and at 15:51 on the Stock Exchange News Service, an announcement came out from Blue Label Telecoms Limited, referral to the Cell C press announcement. Please tell me more, because you're very close to this one.
I'm a little perturbed by this because, and I've got no sides. My only side is that I want to protect people from making the wrong decision. You know, buyers, when a share trades, it means that buyers who might not be apprised of all the information may find themselves in a difficult position. You know, shares trade, so there's a buy and a sell for every trade. And I think that the only way, information needs to be made public, and all information needs to be made public so people can decide on whether or not they want to buy and so on. And I think we know that Cell C, which is 45% owned by Blue Label, has been under immense pressure. They defaulted on certain debt. Now, when you default on debt and S&P rates you as default, it means effectively you're insolvent. You can't pay your debts. The fact that you couldn't come up with an interest payment means that anybody can't put you into an insolvent court or can apply for your insolvency. And what happens is they've come out now, Blue Label, with this view that this is all part of the suspension, they say, of interest payments in July, as part of a wider initiative to improve liquidity and restructure the company's balance sheet.
And well, it goes on to say, Cell C continues to work proactively with all stakeholders to improve its liquidity, debt profile, and long-term competitiveness as part of its strategic roadmap. What a load of...
Okay.
You know what?
Well, now, you tell me what that means.
No
that
idea.
That means they cannot pay their debts. In other words, Cell C cannot pay their debts. And from my point of view, it requires some interference or some intervention from the stock exchange to say, what is happening? You know, is the company a going concern or not? And that's important from the point of view and investment point of view. Now, okay, Blue Label might have other assets. You know, they might have other businesses, but this one should be worth zero in their balance sheet. In other words, I don't know whether there are any liabilities that they have, contingent liabilities that might arise out of that. You know, if I buy shares and they go bankrupt, well, they're worth zero. I have no obligation. But we need to know what the position is. They've delayed their accounts for a month. And I think somewhere along the line, the stock exchange is taking too much of an easy or very liberal attitude towards this. They did it with Steinhoff as well, remember?
Yes.
We had similar attitudes with Steinhoff where people went in believing that there was some value, and subsequent to that date, the shares have just gone lower and lower and lower and probably will eventually be worth zero, although I see they did pay their preference shareholders a small amount.
Just going with the Cell C story, and never mind Steinhoff, because it says here, an agreement will lay the groundwork for a broader national roaming agreement supporting South Africa's policy goals of avoiding network duplication, Cell C said. Cell C engaged with S&P throughout the process and are of the belief that they are on the right track with the transactions currently being finalised. Yeah.
Okay.
What transactions? What are they talking about?
What's happening, of course, many, many people have contracts with Cell C.
Right.
Have paid in advance, and I don't think government wants to see Cell C go in, you know, because of the problems that it might cause. And maybe there are moves to allow it to merge with someone or to try and save it. But I mean, from a point of view, Lindsay, from our point of view, I'm saying, does this protect anybody buying Blue Label at the moment? You know, what at their price now, what price are they valuing the Cell C? You know, what happens if it does go in and it is worthless? You know, what does that mean for buyers of Blue Label? That's where I'm worried about. But I think I'm old school. just come from a different zone or a different era, you know. So that's it. Yeah. Anyway, it's not a big company, but I just can't fathom out what these what this all means. And it's an Investec Bank Limited statement, so I'm sure they're behind it as well. I'm not criticizing them; they're the sponsors. But you know, in many cases, there's really very little in it. It's just a whole lot of words that are put together that don't give me any comfort.
Stadio Holdings Limited came out with their results at 7:05 this morning. Interim results for the 6 months ended 30th of June. The share price down around about 5% as we speak, David Shapiro. This has been a bubble waiting to burst for quite a while now.
I think so. Look, it's on the face of it, it's a pretty good result. I like the company very much. I think because it's in education, and I think there's a it's a very good industry, and they handled it very well. This is Chris van der Merwe's business.
Sorry, before you go on, do you like it because you're an intelligent man and you like people to be educated because that's the future of the country, or do you like it as an investor?
Yes. No, I don't like it as an investor.
Because
you know why? Because it requires a huge amount of money. They're very brave to be doing what they are. I know that they're building an enormous campus in the Western Cape, which is going to provide additional tertiary education for people who want to be educated. I've been out of Curo and I've been out of Stadio for a very long time simply because of the valuations and knowing that these kind of institutions need to spend a huge amount of money before they start to provide returns for shareholders. And I think the problem with Stadio and Curo, which have come under a lot of pressure in share prices over the last couple of years, largely because we're in an area of the market now or in a time where they're not being able to fill the schools. It's taking them longer to fill the schools. And I think the same thing's going to happen in this situation. Someone has to pay. You know what I mean? This is not a free education institution. But still, on the face of it, it's an improved result. But I still think these shares are very expensive relative to the kind of returns that you're going to make. And that's what you're asking me.
Okay, let's move on from there, and let's go to a company called Prosus. Do you know what Prosus is?
Yes, of course.
Just before we get to the details of this, do you like the name or do you not like the name?
I don't know what it means.
Sounds like a
what
monkey.
Prosus, Prosus. I know, I thought so. One of those with the funny noses.
Exactly, proboscis monkeys. Yeah. It sounds. I'm sure I'm just being very superficial here, but anyway, it says here, Naspers announced.
I was hoping it was one of these shelf companies, you know, shelf three, shelf four, where lawyers sometimes register companies and then you eventually change the name. But Prosus doesn't sound that great to me. It doesn't inspire me, you know, Prosus. I don't know what it means.
No one does. Naspers announced its intention on the 25th of March of this year to list its international internet assets on Euronext Amsterdam and as a secondary listing on the main board of the JSE. This is the big thing now. I mean, the arbitrage between the two different exchanges. What is it going to unlock value? Is it a good move? Have they got some kind of grand corporate plan for the future to split up the business? I don't know. But they're cleverer than we are.
They are cleverer. And I think there is a chance that they might unlock some value. And I think the reason is once they go to Amsterdam, it gives them access to greater capital markets from which they can raise money or be able to whatever kind of money they want. And I think a lot more deals will become available to them. So Bob van Dijk is from that area. He's comfortable in that area. And maybe you can find the emergence of a European IT business. They're not many, but I think it does give them a chance. So I'm quite positive. I think valuation still lies in Tencent. It's a complicated deal that's going to mean that the local government collects a huge amount of capital gains tax. Because you can't avoid it in the deal that they're proposing. But and I'm not going to go through it at the moment, but it's a complicated deal. But I mean, it's, you know, hopefully it does unlock some kind of value for shareholders and that they do grow.
Mm. That's a fantastic company. And as we know, there are people behind the scenes that are far, far cleverer than me. And maybe even some of them are cleverer than you. Supergroup.
A lot cleverer.
Supergroup today reported an excellent set of results, it says here. Given the challenging market conditions, both locally and globally, revenue increased 6.2%. Headline earnings increased by 13.6%. Headline earnings per share by 12.5%. Let's have a look. No dividend, though, it says, has been declared for the year ended the 30th of June. So I don't know what the reason behind that is. Supergroup, it's a logistics company.
Yeah, it is. I'm surprised because that share price has come under severe pressure. So that result is better than I thought. Look, it came out fairly late. It came out about an hour ago. I haven't had a chance to go through because you now have to go to the internet and download the presentation to see what's happening. But yes, I've been watching Supergroup, and it's actually been a very poor performer for whatever reason. So this is a little surprise that they're actually positive. I thought there was going to be some kind of a shock in the numbers. You know, if and why I'm saying that, I just picked up the chart now. If we go back not even a year ago to this time last year, let's put it this way, those shares were 41. They're now down to, what, about 27, 28. Mm. So they've come down dramatically on, you know, maybe probably, you know, on the logistical side of the business. So that 12.5, yeah, I've got to go and interrogate it. And the answer might be exactly what you've said. There is no dividend. And it might be that, you know, they're conserving cash for some other issues. But I'm going to pass on that one for the meantime, because you know, just for further investigation, when I've had time to go through it in greater detail.
Like the bean counter that you are, you're a measured individual. No, of course, and that's why you've been so successful. Let's have a look at what happened on Friday, David, because Mr. Trump came out. And he came out with something that I found quite extraordinary. He suddenly said, right, because China is imposing some tariffs on a certain amount of our goods, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it as well. It's going to be a tit for tat situation. And then over the weekend, somebody questioned him. And later on, there was some kind of confusion as to his answer to the question from the journalist. And he said, no, what I actually meant was that I wanted to actually put more, or rather a higher percentage of tariffs. Yeah. And then the market overnight, I mean, this morning around about 12:30, I was looking at the S&P for some reason, and it was down about 30 points. Then it went up about 30 points, and now it's more or less flat on the day. This is untradeable.
It's up 0.5%. It's up 0.5% on the day.
Now. No, it's not. So it's actually, the futures are now flat on the day, David. Oh, I'm looking at the futures. I promise you. And obviously, they're the leaders because they're the most instantaneous.
Market surges. Trump says China wants to resume talks.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The latest headline that's come back. Well, we're as confused as you are. It's all over the place, Lindsay. It's now. Let me go back to Friday because
please.
You missed one point there, which is important.
Go on then.
We go down. This is the hysteria that we have to go through on a day-to-day basis. We go down. Okay. Because China is going to now impose tariffs on the U.S. So we go down about a half a percent.
Yes.
We then pick it up. We make it up when Jay Powell talks, which you forgot, at Jackson Hole.
Yes.
And on his talk, he left the room open for further rate cuts, saying, listen, you know, the U.S. economy is okay, but, you know, the trade wars, we can't read them. We don't, you know, he comes out with a statement. At that point, okay, we're flat. We're actually up. Trump then comes out. Who's a bigger enemy? Is it Powell or is it
President Xi?
Yeah. Who's a bigger enemy of the U.S.? In other words, you're suggesting that your central bank governor, the man who leads the central bank, is actually an enemy of the state, a traitor. Mm. And I mean, so after that, together with the fact that he's going to impose further, we go into this sink, you know, we just sink lower and lower. Eventually, when he came and increased the tariffs, ending 2.5% lower. So that's what we have to go through. And then believing that this is going to continue, he backtracks again, and now we're flat and picking up. I mean, it's absolute madness to try and understand markets and position yourself looking at fundamentals. Lindsay, the big worry is that we don't know what this means. And I was reminding people this morning of Mishkin. I don't know whether you would remember. Fred Mishkin was a Fed governor back in the 08, 09. I can't remember whether he was Kansas or whatever Fed governor he was. But at that stage, we were all panicking about something called subprime, if you remember.
2006, 2007 actually was the first warning of subprime, yeah.
Anyway, Fred Mnuchin came out, and I hope his name is Mnuchin, but he came out and said, at that stage, it's a very small percentage of the property market. At worst, it will affect the U.S. economy by, I don't know, some very, very small amount. What he didn't know, and this is what I'm trying to get at, is that that subprime virus was embedded in hundreds of products, or I don't know, in billions of dollars worth of products that had been exported to the whole world. And this little virus was there, this toxic virus, which caused a massive crisis that we know we're still trying to get out of. So what worries me is this trade wars, I don't think we know what kind of virus it has. And that's my deep concern. I don't know what it means, and how this will unfold. And we will only be able to tell over time, what this all means and these trade wars. So it's a concern, yeah.
Yeah, from 1994 to 97, Mnuchin was executive vice president and director of research at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York and an associate economist of the Federal Open Market Committee, the FOMC of the Federal Reserve System. Mm. He was the editor of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York's Economic Policy Review, etc. And from 1997 to 2006, he was also an academic consultant and served on the economic advisory panel of the New York Fed. Yeah, so he was right up there. He was one of the top guys.
And I remember that statement. I remember Fred Mnuchin, it's not going to be a problem. Somewhere in my notes, I'd find his quote. It was at Jackson Hole. It was at Jackson Hole that he said it, which we just finished on the last weekend. So anyway, I remember that. And what worries me is that it only pointed out to me we don't know, how these things work. We don't know. Today, modern economies are so complicated. Trade is so interconnected. You can't just remove yourself and make the kind of statements that Trump does.
There was a chap called Peter Schiff, who I speak to regularly, and he was on CNBC, I think, in 2006, 2007. And he said there's a problem coming with the subprime lending environment in the United States, and people are buying houses just because they're flipping them and trying to flip them like a burger flipper at Wimpy or McDonald's or something. And he was laughed off CNBC. I've got this clip, and I keep on watching it, and I keep on remembering it. Mm. And eventually, it happened. And I think Mnuchin is one of those people that are dismissive, like the people were to Peter Schiff on CNBC. They dismissed his arguments, and people are dismissing the Trump situation. I believe.
I think so. I think conditions may be difficult. May be different. We haven't got a housing bubble, interest rates are low, and there are a whole lot of other issues. But my main point is that we don't know, we don't know what this really means. We don't know what it will mean if China imposes tariffs on the U.S. to the extent that they have, and vice versa, the U.S. on China to the kind of extent, how it's going to affect other global economies. You sent me a message. You said we are collateral damage, meaning South Africa.
Yes.
And that's the big problem. We'll just be chucked out with the, with all the other trash. It's it's not going to favor us in any kind of way at all. It's very serious if the world does go into some kind of decline.
Yeah, the thing that worries me is the volatility at the top of a market. The day's range on the S&P futures today has been 2,811 to 2,888. Now, if I'd have said to you the day's range on the S&P 5 years ago had been 79 points, or 10 years ago had been, you would have said, goodness me, what's happened? Has there been some kind of nuclear fission or something going on? some kind of wars broken out in the Far East or in Europe?
Yeah,
no.
Exactly. No.
But it's just become the norm. We've become desensitized, David.
Yeah, that's why it's so hard to manage money, because of the volatility and because markets move at such pace either way, either up or down. If a company misses, it can lose 10 or 15%. If a company gains, it can gain 10 or 15%. And I mean, in value terms, that's huge. And as you're saying now, the way that markets move now, it's very, very difficult. You know, it's very difficult to know where to place yourself. And Friday was an extreme example for me. We closed when the JSE closed on Friday. The U.S. markets were actually in positive ground, not heavily positive, but they were positive. Only to wake up this morning or come to work this morning with the markets having fallen, the Nasdaq having fallen over 3%. And now it's party time. You know, I'm just looking at a lot of green on my screen that's coming from the U.S. And anyway, it's we live through it.
Yes, we do. Yesterday, I don't know what you were doing in the afternoon, but I spent my time watching something called cricket. Now, this particular cricket match was between two old foes, England and Australia, and they were competing for something called the Ashes. And I have never, ever seen anything like it in my life. I know you used to go to the Wanderers on a Sunday because there was no television and no Xbox and anything else. As a kid, you used to go to the Wanderers and watch cricket. So you're intimately familiar with this particular game. What an amazing afternoon that was.
It was, and it was absolutely staggering. And credit, you have to give the man credit. I mean, this is Ben Stokes.
Ben Stokes, yes.
Who took on the Australian? I mean, the Australian, they're not slouchers. They're a very good team, the Australians. And I don't know what, 70, 80 runs with one wicket standing.
73 they needed with one wicket left.
With one wicket standing. And yeah. I mean, he just lashed out and he played it though it was a 2020 game. And to have that kind of courage and to have that kind of, he knew that's all he could do. He couldn't bat and get singles as you would in a test match. And I mean, his eye and his timing were just something I have never seen, and courage to do what he did. I think this is one of the finest sporting events what did you call it? It wasn't a finish that I've ever seen. And I watched Arsenal beat Liverpool 2-0 well in 1989, you know, those kind of games.
Yes, but Thomas. I watched that game as well. What was his name? Michael Thomas scoring
Michael
that goal.
Thomas, yeah.
It was the most that was extraordinary. But this equaled that, I think.
I think this was absolutely. This is one of those, and you know, you were there, you watched it, and I loved the crowd. It's the crowd were hysterical every time. They scored a run, and Leach, what's his name, the last
batter? Leach, yeah, the guy with the glasses. They're saying that his is probably the best innings of any innings in cricket history, and he only scored one.
He only faced about 10 or 11 balls.
He stayed there. It was incredible. And do you know what the reason why I'm quite close to Ben Stokes and his career is? Because in 2013, I was at the Melbourne Cricket Ground, courtesy of Investec and the English Cricket Board, and I was sitting down, and I was watching this. There were 99,000 people there on the first day, the biggest ever crowd for a cricket match. And I'm sitting in the ECB stand, and there's a chap next to me, and he seems quite nervous. And he started talking to me, and he said, "I'm sorry if I'm a bit fidgety." And it was Ben Stokes' uncle. And he said, my son has made his debut on this Ashes tour, and he's coming out quite soon. And I said, "Well, tell me about him." And he said, "You just got to watch out for this guy because he is so focused. He is so determined. He is so stoic. He's so brave." And ever since then, I've been watching Ben Stokes' career. And he's amazing. He's an amazing cricketer.
No, wonderful. I mean, both bat and ball. Yeah, brilliant.
Okay, and Arsenal lost 3-1 to Liverpool.
Yeah, well, they're an average side. What did you expect?
Yeah, they really are average, aren't they?
David Luiz. I mean, oh, God.
I think it's a good signing. Is a good signing? 8 million
quid?
He does
stupid things, man. Yeah, I mean, he does stupid things. And when you 1-0 down, it's one thing. Give another goal, match over. And stupidly. But I think I got delight in watching Man United and Spurs go down as well.
Yeah,
I think that just kind of offset the pain a bit.
Don't you think that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is out of his depth?
Yeah, totally. Totally. I think you're going to see the same thing with Lampard as well. I think both of them are just too junior, too inexperienced. And you could see that with Man United. I mean, Roy Hodgson had them taped. Hey, brilliant. Crystal Palace. Hello. South of London.
You're so vindictive. David Shapiro, thank you very much for your time. David Shapiro is from Cessna Securities, and that was Shapiro World. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox.